This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
Rex Heuermann got scammed. And that scam may be the reason he's spending the rest of his life in prison. What are we talking about? Let's get into it. And give me your thoughts and comments on the case in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. On the night of September 1st, 2010, according to prosecutors and witnesses, a man showed up at a house on America Avenue in West Babylon, Long Island. He was there to see an escort named Amber Costello. He'd arranged the visit through a prepaid burner phone, responding to one of Amber's online ads. When he walked in and handed over the cash, Amber's roommate Dave Schaller burst into the room, pretending to be her outraged boyfriend. The man, described by Schaller as enormous, an ogre, well over 6 feet tall, wearing sunglasses, backed off. He left the house. He got into his vehicle. And a short time later, a text message arrived on Amber's phone from the burner. That was not nice. So do I get credit for next time? Not a threat, not rage, not the reaction you'd expect from someone who just got robbed. A calm, almost transactional message. Do I get a credit for next time? As if this were a customer service issue. As if the man on the other end was simply noting a discrepancy in the books and expected it to be corrected. The next night, on September 2nd, 2010, the same burner phone contacted Amber again. This time, the man didn't want to come to the house. He wanted Amber to come to him. And what happened with the boyfriend? He wasn't comfortable meeting at her place. They negotiated a price. Cell tower data tracked the burner phone traveling from Massapequa Park to West Babylon, the same route, the same starting point as the night before. At approximately 11:20 p.m., Amberlynn Costello walked out of her front door, turned the corner, and headed towards a vehicle parked down the block. Shortly after, Dave Schaller noticed a dark-colored truck pass by the house, coming from the direction Amber had walked. It was the same vehicle he'd seen the night before. Amber Costello was never seen alive again. And that dark-colored truck, the first-generation Chevrolet Avalanche, as Schaller described it, with a distinctive triangular feature at the rear, would become the single most important lead in the Gilgo Beach investigation. Amberlynn Costello was born in Charlotte, North Carolina. She grew up in Wilmington. Her life took her through South Carolina, then to Clearwater, Florida, where she married and worked as a waitress and tried to get sober. In Florida, she got involved with local churches and sought to rebuild herself through faith. It didn't hold. Heroin had a grip that faith alone couldn't break. Her sister Kimberly eventually brought her to New York, hoping a geographic reset would help, a new environment, a new start. Amber checked into a 28-day rehabilitation program at St. Charles Hospital in Port Jefferson, Long Island. She completed it. She moved into a sober house, and then she relapsed. By 2010, Amber was living at 1112 American Avenue in West Babylon with several other people, all of them struggling with heroin addiction. She was 27 years old, 4 feet 11, and working as an escort to support her addiction and contribute to the household. She advertised under the names Carolina and Mia on Craigslist and Backpage. She had tattoos, cows on her neck, K-A-O-S, and butterfly on her lower back. The name Margaret on her leg. People who knew her describe her as quirky, goofy, generous, the kind of person who'd give you the shirt off her back. In the Netflix documentary about the case, a friend remembers her with warmth, the energy, the humor, the willingness to show up for people, even when her own life was falling apart. The house on America Avenue was chaotic. Amber and her roommate shared a single cell phone. The male roommates, Dave Schaller, and another man known as Bear Brudsky, would sometimes arrange clients for Amber and the other women in the house. And they had a system. Once a client showed up and paid, Schaller would burst in, posing as a jealous boyfriend. The client would flee and they'd keep the money. It was a hustle. Not a safe one, not a sustainable one, but it had worked before. There was even chatter about it online. John's warning each other about the setup at the America Avenue address. What they didn't account for was what would happen when the wrong man came back for a second visit. The scam that Amber and Schaller ran on the night of September 1st wasn't unusual for them, but the man they ran it on, according to prosecutors and the evidence trail, was Rex Huerman. The text he sent afterwards suggests he wasn't rattled by being scammed. He was recalibrating. Do I get a credit for next time? It's like someone who planned to collect, someone who is already thinking about the return trip. The cell tower data prosecutors have laid out shows the burner phone that contacted Amber traveling from Massapequa Park, where Huerman lived, to West Babylon on both nights. On the first night, September 1st, the phone pinged towers consistent with that route before and after the scam. And on September 2nd, the pattern repeated. The phone moved from Massapequa Park to West Babylon. Amber left the house. Schaller saw the truck, and then Amber was gone. She didn't take her cell phone with her. She walked out on foot to meet a vehicle parked around the corner. Nobody reported her missing. Her family believed she was in a residential drug rehab program. Her roommates themselves, deep in addiction, didn't immediately raise the alarm. It wasn't until December 13th, 2010, more than 2 months later, that her remains were found along Ocean Parkway near Gilgo Beach, wrapped in burlap and bound alongside Maureen Brainerd Barnes and Megan Waterman. Amber Costello was the last of the Gilgo Four to disappear, and the case became the thread that unraveled everything. It started with a Schaller's description when investigators first canvassed America Avenue after the Gilgo Beach discovery. Schaller told them about the man who'd come to the house in September of 2010. The physical description, massive, imposing, an ogre. The vehicle, the dark-colored first-generation Chevy Avalanche with a triangular feature near the rear. The text message, that was not nice, so do I get a credit for next time? And the fact that Amber had gone to meet the same man the very next night. For years, that description sat in the case file. Investigators knew they were looking for a large man who drove a specific model of truck, but the case was stalling. Leadership changed. Leads dried up. Suffolk County's investigation was dodged by internal dysfunction, to put it lightly, and accusations of mismanagement, to put it lightly. I'm not trying to downplay the corruption there, but this is a story that is about Amber. There's plenty of places where we go on about that shit show. Leadership changed, leads dried up, Suffolk County investigation. Like I said, it was a shit show. The Chevrolet Avalanche didn't go anywhere until 2022, when a multi-agency task force formed to re-examine the cold case decided to go back to the basics. They ran the vehicle description through registration databases. A first-generation Chevrolet Avalanche registered to the area, connected to someone who fit the physical profile. The search returned a name: Rex Huerman, an architect, a resident of Massapequa Park, a man who commuted to Midtown Manhattan, the same neighborhood where Melissa Barthelemy had been working when she disappeared, the same area where Jessica Taylor had last been seen. From there, the dominoes started falling. The burner phone data, the phones connected to multiple victims, all pinging from a tight cluster of cell towers around Massapequa Park, the area investigators called the box. The commute patterns, burner phones traveling between Massapequa Park and Midtown Manhattan, mirroring Huerman's daily route, the timing, every victim disappeared when Huerman's wife and children were verifiably out of state. Then the pizza crust, the abandoned DNA sample that linked Huerman's genetic profile to hair recovered from the victims. Without Amber Costello's case, none of that falls into place. Without Schaller seeing the truck, without Schaller describing the man, without that text message sitting in phone records for over a decade, connecting a burner phone to a scam that happened at 1112 America Avenue, Amber's case was the entry point. The moment where a witness saw something, remembered something, and described something that eventually allowed investigators to put a name and a face to a pattern that had been invisible for years. Amber's sister, Kimberly Overstreet, said something publicly after Huerman's arrest that stopped people in their tracks. She said she forgives him. And she said Amber would have too. It brings me peace to know that my sister is laying with my family, Overstreet told reporters. That if my parents were here, if my sister was here, she would say thank you and I forgive him. I forgive him and I would too. I don't know if it makes a difference to him, but it makes a difference to me and I can move on. That kind of grace in the face of what happened to Amber is difficult to comprehend. Amber was 27 years old. She was 4'11". She was battling an addiction and had already beaten her once, fighting her way back, losing ground, trying again. She was living in a house where survival was a daily negotiation between the addiction, the hustle, and the risks that came with the work. She was generous. She was funny. She was someone's sister, someone's friend, someone who made people laugh even when nothing about the situation was funny. And according to prosecutors, the man who came to her door on September 1st of 2010, the man who roommates described as an ogre, the man who drove away calmly after being scammed and sent a text that read like a receipt, had allegedly been doing this for 17 years. Sandra Costella in 1993, Valerie Mack in 2000, Jessica Taylor in 2003, Maureen Brainerd Barnes in 2007, Melissa Barthelemy in 2009, Megan Waterman earlier in 2010, and then Amber, the last known victim, the one whose case would ultimately point investigators in the right direction. Amber didn't know any of that when she walked out the door. She didn't know the man in the truck had allegedly killed before. She didn't know that the text message, "Do I get credit for next time?" was allegedly sent by someone who had been refining this process for nearly two decades. She didn't know that her roommate's description of the vehicle would sit in a case file for over a decade before someone thought to run it through a registration database. She walked to the corner. She got in the truck. And the man who prosecutors say had been evading investigators since 1993 allegedly drove away with a woman whose case would ultimately end his freedom. There's something almost unbearable about that irony. Amber Costello, in the final act of her life, unknowingly created the evidentiary trail that would bring down the man accused of killing her and six other women. The witness, the vehicle description, the text message, the cell tower data, the registration records, the surveillance, the pizza crust, the DNA match, the arrest. It all traces back to a house on America Avenue in West Babylon, to a scam that went wrong or went right, depending on how you look at it, to a roommate who saw something and told the police about it, and to a woman named Amber Lynn Costello, who was 4'11" and brave enough or desperate enough or simply out of options enough to walk out the door a second time to meet the man who'd already been scammed once and came back anyway. Amber deserved better than the circumstances that put her on that corner. She deserved the rehab that stuck. She deserved the fresh start her sister tried to give her. She deserved to be 27 in a world that offered her something other than a house full of addiction and a Craigslist ad and a midnight appointment with the worst kind of person. But she also deserves to be remembered as more than a victim, because Amber Costello's case, her roommate's courage, the evidence left behind, the thread that connected a truck to a name, to a house, to a suspect, is the reason the Gilgo Beach case has an ending at all. The last known victim became the one who broke it open. And that might be the closest thing to justice that this story has. Your thoughts are welcome. We encourage them. We'd love to see them. I'd love to see them in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. You can join us right now on Substack for free. There's no paywall. Check it out. The link is in the description. YouTube as well. Join us there. Press subscribe and give us your thoughts. And be sure to press subscribe wherever you get podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is, hit subscribe. We do greatly appreciate that. We'll continue the conversation there in the comments. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers Podcast.